Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends, and welcome to a new episode of our radio show, Friends Forum. My name is John McCormick, and I am your host. Just as the talk show name suggests, this is an informal forum for friends to come together and discuss topics and or random thoughts. Although I will suggest topics at times, everyone is welcome to suggest a topic as well. The show will be in a few segments over the next 90 minutes. It should be a lot of fun. I created this show so friends that may never get a chance to meet in person can at least talk to each other here. It's like the next best thing. You know, we all get to put a voice to a face. I just want to say how grateful I am for all my friends that I have met through Facebook and other social networking sites, and I want to just thank each one of you for being a friend. Well, it's now time to start the show. You have two options. You can choose to just listen to the show via your computer, or you can call in to join the live group discussion on the air. If you call in, you will hear the show through your phone. The listener dial-in number is 646-478-3380. That's 646-478-3380. Or if needed, call the toll-free number at 1-888-238-8575. That's 1-888-238-8575. So please call now to be connected. Thank you in advance for listening to the show and to anyone that may call in. Again, please call in now. I just want to say, just mention again how grateful I am to all my friends, and I look forward to speaking with many of you tonight when you call in to the show. So please do so right now. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. And we do have a couple of callers, but before I introduce our callers, I wanted to play a song that seems appropriate for tonight and every night on the show. It talks about people staying together, like our friends here tonight. You know, we come here on the show. Some of us have been here almost every episode, and it's just wonderful. The song is Dolly Parton's Together You and I. And even if you're not a Dolly Parton fan or a country music fan, you're going to love this song. So enjoy it, and we'll be right back to introduce our callers.
Constant as the sun making its journey through the heavens, and we'll always be together, you and I. Together you and I can stop the rain and make the sunshine, paint a pretty rainbow brush with love across the sky.
back. I love that song because it is so true. With our friends here tonight on the show, how we are, you know, always here together. And so I don't care. Like I said before, I'm sure everyone really loves Dolly Parton. but I do see we have a couple of callers, and I believe I know who they are. So I'm going to just take a guess. I believe that we have Julie Brooks on the line and Joey Savage. Am I correct?
You are correct, John.
Yes,
see,
you are correct, John.
Am I a psychic or what is that? I mean, I don't understand. Gosh. How are you ladies doing tonight?
Well, I'm fine. Just kicking back pretty easy.
Well, I'm glad you made it on the show tonight, Joey, because, you know, last week I wanted to play an audio clip of you on Brain when you were at Brainwash here in San Francisco. So I want to play it tonight. And and then I have a surprise right after I play it of something else I'm going to play. I say it's a surprise because I don't usually play it, but I want to. So it's going to be interesting, I think. And Julie, how are you doing now? Do you have anything coming up? I believe you do have something coming up as far as a show, don't you?
Well, I actually was supposed to have a reoccurring show on Saturday afternoons at the venue that I had been doing for about 5 weeks, but a couple of things have been coming up, and they've not really fulfilled what they would say. But I do actually have a MC position that I'm going to do on the 23rd of February for two really great comedians. One is actually a female comedian, and I'm really excited about that because she's been doing it for a while, and I don't have a whole lot of female comedians in my area in Kansas City to communicate and network with, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, great. Excellent. And Joey, what do you have coming up with your performances?
I have some open mics scheduled in Dallas next week, but that's about it.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
Completely
well,
open if anybody wants to hire me.
Well, you never know, right? You know,
right.
That's something I was going to mention a little bit later in the show about what happened to me, you know, trying to get a job, not necessarily a gig, but it's real, you know, like for me, you know, just a job. But I'll talk to you guys about that a little bit later. But anyways, why don't you tell us, Joey, exactly where in Dallas are you performing, so that in case we have some people in Texas and Dallas area there that may want to come and see you?
The Dallas Comedy House in Little Elm. No, it's not Little Elm. What is it? I can't even remember the name of the little suburb. But,
oh, that's okay.
They have an open mic every Tuesday. And then on Thursday, there is also one at the Backdoor Comedy Club downtown.
Okay, excellent. Great. Well, I wish I was there to come and see you, you know. But again, you're going to be coming out here to San Francisco hopefully sometime soon again, so that will be excellent.
That would be nice.
Yeah, that would be really awesome.
John, I wanted to say that open mics are a great place to practice. But considering the majority of the audience is usually other comedians, it's a really hard audience because comedians don't laugh at other comedians.
You know, that's
true.
Interesting.
They usually stand at the bar and drink while you're on, and then they expect you to sit there while they're on.
Right.
You know, I did notice that before because it seems like they're, like, talking. They're not even paying attention sometimes, you know, to the other person that's performing. So
they're just waiting their turn.
And I'm almost like, shut up. You know, be polite, listen, you know. I know. Well,
but it's
so,
great practice, though, seriously, because you put your time in on the stage, you know, you're doing it all right. And even if no one's listening, you're getting that stage time, you're out there and you're putting yourself in front of the crowd. So each time you go on stage, you get stronger and stronger.
Well, that sounds great, and that's something, you know, like I mentioned before, that I do plan on trying to do, you know, in person. I want to take it to that next level, you know. I I did write something, I did record it, and but, you know, to really stand there in front of an audience, I mean, I really admire you ladies for being able to do that. And like you said, it's good practice, and you get that confidence built up, and you know. And I love how Joey and Julie, you too, you both like to record your performances. So I think that's a great tip for everyone out there who wants to get into, you know, stand-up, is to try to find a friend with a camera to record you, so that you can then watch that over and see what maybe you can change. I mean, would you guys agree with me on that?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
John, I actually record every performance. I was told by a good friend, Rob Shapiro, actually told me every time I get up on stage, he said, you need to record yourself, because you can look back and you can see what works, you can see what doesn't, and you can see yourself, because you don't perform in front of a mirror, so you don't actually know what you look like when you're performing. And I don't even practice in front of a mirror, because I'm not going to perform in front of a mirror. So, you know, if I do practice, I practice in front of actual people, not comedians. Not saying that comedians are not people, but I have to practice in front of family members or somebody that's not connected to comedy in any way.
Well, okay. No, that makes sense. Absolutely. And, you know, I did want to say that, like I said, tonight, what I want to do is I do want to play Joey's Brainwash comedy routine. And we are about ready to start the next segment. And the next segment is going to be based on comedy. So we're going to start off with Joey's routine. And then there's going to be another routine after that. But I'm not going to tell you. It's a surprise who it's going to be. So... but it's going to be coming up. But first, what I want to do is just say out there to everybody, if you are listening and you haven't called in yet, please do so now. The listener dial-in number is 646-478-3380. That's 646-478-3380. Or if needed, please call the toll-free number at 1-888-238-8575. That's 1-888-238-8575. So please call in now to be connected. So, well, Joey, you know, last week, like I mentioned, we had an interview, and I was so excited talking to you. And, you know, we played your first clip, and, you know, with, you know, the first one, and then we started talking, and then all of a sudden, I'm just talking about playing your Brainwash clip, and then all of a sudden I didn't play it. So I have no idea how that happened, so I apologize to you. But I am going to play it tonight. Brainwash is a really unique place here in San Francisco. It's a very fun place. It's a combination of a laundromat and a cafe where people can also perform on stage. And I had the pleasure of being in the audience during this recording of Joey's performance. So enjoy it, and we will be right back. So this is Joey Savage at Brainwash here in San Francisco performing, and we'll be right back.
Hey, howdy, y'all. I'm Joey Savage. I'm from Coffee City, Texas. That's the trailer park between Child Reduction Church and the liquor store. Yeah. It's a place, it's kind of an oldish neighborhood. Most of my family lives there, and they're all in their 80s and 90s. And we call our neighborhood the Savage Compound because we're so much like the Kennedys, except we're poor. And nobody's tried to assassinate anybody yet. But, I happen to be the youngest boy in the neighborhood, except for the occasional kid comes down the back of the ticket. It's a place where technology has recently leaped forward into 1985. Yeah, forward. And they all have 8-track tape players in their truck. And imagine VCR back in the trailer so they could watch the video. I went through the neighborhood looking at all their collections of videos, and, you know, for the specific purpose of future blackmail, but it's not going to work because all I found was a lot of Matlock and Walton. But I did run across a tape Jane Fonda's first exercise video from the 80s, and I found that I hate it more now than I did then. Yeah, she's just a snot in spandex, and now she's got a new tape out, and we just were unhappy because she's all bendy and twisty, and she's got her arms wrapped around her legs, and her legs wrapped around her ankles, and her ankles around her head, and then she looks at the screen and she says, "Breathe." I say, "Fuck you, Jane Fonda. I can't stand that skinny bitch." I used to have a voodoo doll of Jane Fonda, but it was so skinny I could stab my own finger. So I made the mistake of watching this video in the presence of my mom and her sisters, and oh my God, they love Jane Fonda. Love her. So they formed this little self-improvement group, if you can imagine, the 80 and 90 self-improvement. And they get together every day and they work out. And they even know the lingo. My mom would say, "I'm scared." She's like, "Clutter steps." She's like 84. Her clutter steps are like this big. With an inch and a half. Yeah. But this is where I have 911 on speed dial, because I've walked in and I've seen these 80 and 90 year old women popping their hamstrings for trying to do the Jane Fonda butt lift. Oh, it's sad. It's really sad. It's a horrible place to live because everybody in my neighborhood thinks that the J.G. Wentworth commercial is a real opera. 877 cash now. So I pray for him. Yeah, I'm real close to God over there in Texas because, well, we're like this, you know. I pray to him and he sends messages to me in my alphabet. Because as you know, or you may not know being in San Francisco, but that is God's preferred method of communication with his people in Texas. So, the last message he sent me was TRONLDTG, which I took to mean try online dating. I signed up with eHarmony and Zeus and Match and the Fish one and the Fish one. It's not going to work out. You know, you got to be really specific on those dating questionnaires. Like I said, age didn't matter. It's kind of a mistake. Because, well, I'm not saying that they sent me profiles of really old men, but I've heard of Socrates and Moses and Abe Vigoda. Yeah. Well, I looked at Moses' profile. I'm just saying that. And yeah, I don't think that he looks kind of cute. You know, he looks kind of like an older Charlton Heston. But I don't think it would have worked out with him because he spent way too much time in the desert for me. And there was that rumor about burning bush, and I didn't want to go there. So then they sent me a profile of a guy I knew in high school, and he couldn't get an exam. In fact, he kind of looks like that guy. Is that you, Gary? Oh, gosh. He lives in his own basement. Ha! So then I stopped the online dating, and I went, I decided I would flirt with the guys in my mom's church. You know, kind of. And that didn't work either because they just ushered me down the front of the baseboard. They said, "You're all green people, this is for our act." So now it's kind of pathetic, but I just hang around the gate at the state prison. I think maybe, you know, on some days the guards will come out and say, "Hey, there's somebody being released today." But mostly I just sit there in the car and kind of like wave my underwear in case somebody wants to make an escape attempt. It's not a great system. blind dating. Sure. So.
That was great, Jelly. I love that.
You know, I got to say something about that venue. It takes a lot of concentration to get up there. The stage is like 2 feet wide, and there's people crossing in front of you, and the door open, and the cold January wind coming
yes,
through.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I remember that. Yes. Yes,
fun.
Yeah, but you did a great job. I mean, you like you said, it's concentration, and you concentrated. You did an awesome job. And like I said, I was just so happy to be there and meet you and get a picture with you, and you know, it was just awesome. And now I wanted just to say, you know, again, that you know, if you wanted to find out more, you know, information about Jelly, you know, she does have her personal website, joeysavage.com, and then, like I mentioned before, too, she is also an author, so she has her book out, The Vanilla People, which she told us about last week, which was awesome, and that's available on Amazon.com in paperback and also as an ebook. So I suggest everyone check that out. You know, it's really awesome. And then again, Julie, who's also on the line, Julie Brooks, she can also be found on YouTube. A lot of her performances are there. And then I believe also on Weebly. Is that correct, Julie?
Yes, that is correct. I was going to say to Joey, it sounded like the venue that we just listened to was very similar to one of my very first performances. I wasn't really getting a whole lot of gigs, and so I decided I would perform at a volunteer for a volunteer event, some kind of fundraiser for a school, and it was all bands and then me in between a set of bands, and it was so loud in there, I literally could not hear my own voice in the microphone. And I had someone record me, and I put up maybe a 20-second example of why I will never perform at a music concert ever again between sets, because it was so horrible. It was my worst experience, I would say.
Go ahead, Joey. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just want to say, almost every time you go somewhere new, it's an adventure, and you don't know what you're going to put up with, but I love it. I'm addicted.
Well, I do remember when we were at Brainwash, it was all comedy except for one person got up and played. All they did was play the guitar. I remember that, you know. So I guess an open mic can mean other things to some
mm-hmm.
people. So yeah. So, well, I do have one more audio clip of somebody performing a comedy routine. You know him very well. You're talking to him right now. And I took my comedy routine and I recorded it on an audio tape. So I don't know if either one of you have heard it yet, but I thought this would be my premiere to do stand-up before I actually do it in front of an audience.
Yay!
Yeah. So I'm going to perform it. I recorded it, and now I'm going to play it right now. So there's no audience, so I don't know if it's, you know, people are going to laugh or not. There's no one there in the audience.
Let me introduce you, John.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, here it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming to the stage, John McCormick.
Yay!
Thank you, and here we go.
I recently got into a fight with my partner. It was brutal. It was like the final battle scene from The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. Relationships are hard, aren't they? Has anybody been in a breakup? I think most of us have. Now, who wishes they were going through one? Oh, well, maybe you can't answer that right now. You can, you know, let me know later. Has anybody gone through a breakup but didn't know they were going through a breakup until the last minute? In other words, who has been dumped? That's what happened to me recently. I guess the writing was on the wall, literally, or to be more specific, the ceiling. I woke up one morning, opened my eyes, and written above me with my shaving cream was, "Get up, get dressed, and get the hell out," with a smiley face. why do people put smiley faces on everything? My ex would do that all the time. You know, he'd say, John, remember to take out the trash, smiley face. John, you were a real butt last night. We need to talk, smiley face. I guess if you put a smiley face on it, you can say anything, like, go to hell, butt wipe, smiley face. I slept with your wife, smiley face. Or your doctor can write you a note that says, you have 2 weeks to live, smiley face. That's what we should all do, put smiley faces on everything. That makes everything okay. So anyways, I woke up, and here is this message written above me saying, get the hell out. Looking back, there were signs this was maybe going to be coming. First, we stopped having relations that often. Then things started disappearing from the apartment. A vase here, a mirror there. But when the couch disappeared, I started to freak out. First, I thought we had a ghost or something, like, because, you know, that has happened to me before. It really did. I grew up in a haunted house and started seeing ghosts at the age of 2. You know, it's like I see dead people, you know, like the boy in the movie The Sixth Sense. But it really did happen. When I got older and moved out on my own, I thought that would be the end of it. But one day, things started disappearing in my apartment. Then one night, this something jumped on my bed. I looked down, and it was a big, dark, smoky figure. It threw me back on the bed. I could feel it, you know, just holding me down. I'm serious about this. Then this ghost or whatever started moving all over my bed, touching my body everywhere. And I have to admit, parts of my body did have a reaction. Can you believe it? I got felt up by a ghost. Yeah, then after it had its way with me, it left and never came back. Just like when we started to get intimate, it disappeared. That's like some of my dates lately. Anyways, when things started disappearing recently, I thought the ghost was back. I was a little scared, but I was a little excited. I thought, well, maybe I might be getting lucky again. When I mentioned my concerns to my partner about things disappearing, you'll love the response. I was asked, are you sure? I said, yes. The damn couch is gone. Yes, I'm sure. The response was, I don't remember having a couch like that. Are you feeling okay? I said, I don't know what you're talking about. We did have a couch. It was your mother's. So I said, wait a minute. You took those things, didn't you? Are you leaving me? There was this pause for a moment, and then my partner shocked me and said, yes, I am, just screaming at me. And I said, why? And the response was, because I'm sick of you. You drive me nuts. I want you out. I'm selling the house, and I already found a new place, so get out. Can you believe that? I'm like, what the hell? Where is all this coming from? Well, maybe there was one thing that, you know, helped, you know, break us up, and that could have been maybe when I went a little wacko for a while. The official term, I guess, is chemical imbalance. When the doctor told me that, I was like, you mean I'm nuts? He said, no, there are meds for this. You'll be okay. But I wasn't okay. For a while, I was totally wacko. I first hallucinated my room in my living room had become a desert and that God was talking to me. I actually had a very long conversation with him. And this was all without drugs. Then I thought I was the second coming of Christ, you know, the return of the Messiah. The only difference was that I believed I wouldn't be called Jesus. Instead, my name would be called Sam. I actually wanted to grow a beard, wear a robe, and pray all the time. But it was when I got to the point where I believed I was God himself. That's when I realized that maybe, you know, I might be becoming a little, you know, irrational. I call it my Anne Hesh moment. Okay, I didn't go out into the desert. The desert came to me. Nor was I looking for a spaceship, or did I temporarily become a lesbian. I did, however, lose touch with reality for a brief moment. Actually, I think it made me more interesting when I went a little nuts. I think everybody loves a crazy person. You know, am I right? You probably know someone a little nuts right now, and maybe you are. Anyways, thank God, the real one, not me, for meds. The only problem with meds is there's sometimes some very serious side effects. When I started my meds, my side effects were so serious, I actually ended up in a medical journal. Seriously. Well, you be the judge. First, my eyesight became blurry. Then I became extremely lethargic. The only time I would move would be when I would have involuntary muscle movements, like my arms jerking and my legs jumping. But the worst side effect of all was when I became completely numb in my groin area. I couldn't feel my penis. Think about that, guys. You know, I'd be like trying to feel it and then nothing. I would try again and still nothing. So here I am, partially blind, sitting like a zombie on the couch, trying to guess the next area of my body that would jump or move involuntarily. And did I mention I couldn't feel my penis? Now do you see why I ended up in a medical journal? Thank God my doctor changed my meds. Can you believe it took 2 weeks for the side effects to go away and I could finally feel my boys? I still remember my first time I could feel them again, and so does the ceiling. And that leads us right back to that message that was written on the ceiling, so I guess I better do what it asked me to do and get the hell out.
Okay, and we are back. Okay, so what do you guys think about that?
I really liked it, John. I actually had heard it before several months ago, I think, maybe 2 months ago, but I'm not completely sure about the timeline. But I really, really enjoyed, again, this time listening to it, the smiley face, about smiley faces behind everything. That's just like somebody always saying, well, bless her heart, or God bless her, or something, you know. In the South, that's what people say to be nice. It's sort of like I had an open mic comedian the other night that said, when somebody says not to be politically correct, you know they're about to be an asshole.
Well, thank you very much, Julie. I appreciate that. You know, I like I said, I never recorded it before, so when I did, I just wanted to share it and see what you guys thought about it. But thank you. Well, I guess what I wanted to do was finish off this comedy segment, which is based, like I said, on comedy. I wanted to play a very silly song. Okay, I want you to enjoy it, and then we'll be right back to start a new segment and a new topic. So here is a funny, silly song.
Too deep for show and tell, I'm so excited I might yell. Can't wait to show you, it's so cool. I went to grandma's yesterday, worked in her garden the whole day. She let me bring some veggies here to school. I got a carrot, I got a yam, I got a green bean fresh not from a can. Got a potato, and as you can probably see, I also got a pea, I got a pea, I got a pea. Why is everyone laughing at me? So if you find a little pea on the floor after I pee, I think it probably belongs to me. I got a pumpkin, I got a squash, I got some lettuce, I still need to wash. I got an onion and some broccoli, I also got a pea, I got a pea, I got a pea. Why is everyone laughing at me? So if you find a little pea on the floor after I pee, I think it probably belongs to me. Yes, if you find a little pea on the floor after I leave, I think it probably belongs to me.
I just love that little silly song. Well, I forgot to ask you, Joey, what did you think about my routine? Did you have any advice for me?
John, I thought it was great. I enjoyed the part about the smiley faces as well. And I thought when you were talking about how you couldn't feel your penis, you should say, and I tried again, and I tried again, and I tried again, yeah, and I tried again.
Oh, okay. Well, now the live show, if I were to perform it, doesn't say that. It says a lot more. I really toned it down, you know, to put it on the radio. But the live show has a lot more, it's a little bit more risque, you know. So, but, you know, I wanted to keep it, you know, clean, as they say, you know, for the radio. I did want to say, though, if anyone is listening and haven't called in yet, please do so now. The listener dial-in number is 646-478-3380. That's 646-478-3380. Or if needed, please call the toll-free number at 1-888-238-8575. That's 1-888-238-8575. So please call now to be connected. You know, for this next segment, I wanted to discuss about estranged relationships and how sometimes time runs out, you know, to make amends. And the reason why I want to talk about that, if you ladies would like to do that, is because this month is the four-year anniversary of my sister who passed away. And unfortunately, at the time of her passing, we really had not yet made complete amends or became close again after a long period of our entire lives of being so close. And in honor of her memory, what I did was I wrote a short story, and it's actually going to be in an anthology that's coming out soon. And I just wanted to let you guys know that in a couple of weeks, I'm going to have a special episode that's going to be with a lot of my writer friends. They're very successful. They have books out. They have screenplays that have been produced into movies. They're very successful, and they were so kind to invite me into a group, a writing group with them, and every 2 weeks we wrote a short story with a different theme. And so all of a sudden we have all these short stories. So they've all been put into an anthology, and they're actually going, it's finished being edited, and it's just the cover of the book is being designed, and that's coming out very soon, in maybe just a couple weeks or so. So I'm excited about that, you know, to finally have all my short stories published. But what I wanted to say, though, is one of them is a story called Angel in the Night, and I just recorded it yesterday on audio just so I could play it tonight. But this is something in honor of my sister, and when we come back, I would like to talk just a little bit about estranged relationships and that. And so here it is. It's called Angel in the Night.
Angel in the Night by John S. McCormick. As Nina stood in the middle of the street outside her childhood home during a severe lightning storm, Zach, her brother, yelled, "Get out of there. Are you crazy?" Nina just smiled as lightning bolts struck all around her and said, "God is more powerful than nature, but sometimes they work together." At that moment, a lightning bolt struck Nina and she vanished. Zach quickly opens his eyes and wakes up. Once again, he had a dream of his deceased sister who died 3 years ago. He has dreamt of her almost every night, sometimes in multiple dreams. The last time Zach saw Nina alive was at a family Christmas dinner, which was 1 month before she died. There she told him, "I feel like I lost my brother." Zach and Nina had a very strained relationship for many years. Zach always judged Nina too harshly for her past and current actions and weaknesses. He wasn't fazed at all by her admission, still holding on to the past. When he got the call, Nina had died unexpectedly due to complications of an enlarged heart, Zach found himself devastated and overcome with guilt and shame. He realized in that instance that he had been too tough on his sister and shouldn't have taken his friendship away from her all those years. He also realized he had no right to judge her, since he knew he is far from perfect. He felt like a hypocrite. After telling his friends about his constant dreams of Nina, he got many explanations. His best friend told him that she is wanting and asking him to come with her, for him to die. Another friend said she is now his guardian angel, watching over him and out for him and a pastor told him he may need to do something to get her to move on. Zach decided to take the pastor's advice. He lit a white candle and spoke to a picture of Nina. He said, "I'm so sorry for cheating us out of having a real relationship like the close one we shared in the past. I'm also sorry for judging you like I did, since I have many flaws of my own. Thank you for being in my dreams and being my guardian angel. But now it is time for you to go. I look forward to the time we will meet again in another life. I love you, sis." Later that night, Zach had his last consistent dream of his sister. Although it was pitch dark, the brightness of the full moon cast just enough light for Zach to watch the hearse carrying his sister's dead body make its way up the hill on a winding country road. As she disappeared from sight around the last curve, he finally felt peace and closure in knowing she knew he loved her.
Okay, and we are back.
Wow.
And like I said, this is a short story based on my estranged relationship of my sister when she passed. But I have come to believe, dreaming about her almost every night for all these years, that she is my guardian angel, you know. So I think that's wonderful. But I just wanted to say, though, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, I know sometimes we have, like, situations with people that are close to us and then we don't talk to them for a period of time. I mean, I don't know. I mean, what are the solutions? I mean, what do you think that what someone can do, you know, to make amends, even though it may be very difficult?
Wow, I don't think you talk to the right person.
Oh, okay.
I really don't have good solutions in that area, except that I have a forgiving spirit, so forgiving is what I think is most important. And forgiving doesn't mean forgetting, but
sure,
just so that you can resolve things with your own self and not have a body full of hate, because that can only hurt yourself.
Right. Well, see, that's great. I mean, I agree with you, and I learned a lot, you know, from that. And so, I mean, I've always been the kind of person that if I know I'm wrong, you know, I will say I'm wrong. And if I don't realize it at the time that I was wrong, I usually very quickly realize it if I am, and I tell the person and I apologize. But sometimes it's hard because they won't accept it or they won't get back with you. And then it makes it a little difficult. I don't want to say who it is right now, but there's one person that just recently unfriended me in real life. This is someone I've known all my life. Unfriended me because of the fact that I voted for Obama in the last election. Yeah, that was it. That was the only reason, because I put my friends and family. No, I put Obama over my friends and family. So that's why, you know, I'm not worthy, you know, to be someone to talk to, I guess, at this time. But you know what's interesting is that over the holidays, you know, I did send a card and I just said, you know, I think this is, you know, not right, and I think we need to talk, and you know, and I'm just telling you, if I offended you in any way, I don't know how I did. I just, you know, executed my right as an American to vote. But if there's anything else I did, let me know, and I apologize for it, and let's talk. And so now it's been over a month now or so, and I haven't heard from him. So, you know, it's just odd how that can happen, you know, with relationships, especially when you've been together for a long time. It could be a family member that you've known, of course, from your birth, and then it could be also somebody that you've had a good friendship with for like 20 years. It can end too. But I don't know. I mean, sometimes, I don't know, maybe it's for the better. I don't know. What do you think, Julie, about all that?
You know, Donna, I was going to say a lot of that comes down to people who like to control the situation. And when people realize that they can't control you, they get angry. And whether they're angry at themselves or angry at you, they oftentimes decide to cut those individuals off. I have had situations recently, since I've only really been doing comedy for 6 months, I've actually only really taken the stage the past 2 months. I've had so many people, not really in real life, but want to defriend me, sort of as the person you're speaking of did, because I have taken supposedly a road that a mother with small children and a husband should not take, working in bars and staying out late. And I'm doing something that I know I'm good at. I'm doing something that I enjoy. And for the first time in my life, I'm not taking no for an answer. And they don't like that I'm telling them no now. And it comes down to you have to say, this is my life. These are my decisions. My children are well taken care of. And
right.
I am doing something that I enjoy, and I should not be penalized or whatever for it. And I feel like when somebody realizes they can no longer control your actions and the things that you're doing with your life, they get angry about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think
you know, John, I also would like to say that before I did comedy, I was actually a marriage and family therapist. I worked with children. I worked with addicts. And so I did a lot of dream analysis. So I personally believe that your dreams are a carryover from your unconscious mind that has not laid to rest yet. There are issues that need to be laid to rest, I guess, for reoccurring dreams.
Well, I just dreamt about her last night again. For 4 years now, ever since she's passed away, I dream about her almost every night. It's just really odd, you know, how that works out. But they're always nice dreams, you know. We're always, you know, in some kind of positive situation, and it's usually surrounded about around my hometown home, you know, where I grew up, where we were close at as teens and kids, because we both moved out together at the same time. She moved out as a teen, and I moved out as a teen on our own, and we had apartments right next to each other. So we were, you know, really close, and it was just, but thank you, though, Julie, for saying that, because I think that's it, too. I'm not fighting the dreams, you know. I feel like I have this connection with her now that I didn't have at the end when she passed, you know. So it's nice to know now, even though she's gone physically, maybe spiritually or some other way, we're together.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, I mean, it's really tough sometimes, but you know, because this is the month, this is like 4 years now, the month where she passed away, and so I can't believe, you know, how fast time goes by. But I did want to say, and I just wanted to, just for a moment, just interrupt what we were doing, just to, like, let everyone know that if you are listening and you haven't called in yet, because I can see how many people are listening, just so you know, guys, you know, please don't be shy. You know, give us a call. You know, call us at 646-478-3380 or call the toll-free number at 888-238-8575. But if you don't feel comfortable to call in tonight, that's fine. I appreciate you listening, and I'm glad you're here. But I think this concludes our segment about this topic. And before we start another topic, I did want to play an audio of a friend of mine. His name is Wayne Jordan, and he is a computer expert. And I did play it, I think, a couple of weeks ago, his audio of his him promoting his online tech support business. But the reason why I want to play it another time tonight is because he's been on the line with me 3 nights in a row helping me fix my friend's computer. He's such a great guy, very knowledgeable, been doing this for over 20-some years. So I just want to go ahead and play his ad.
He's from Texas.
Yes, he's from Texas, yes. And I'm going to play it, and then we'll be right back for our next segment.
Hi, my name is Wayne Jordan, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about myself and my company, Rescue Me 911. I have over 25 years of experience in the IT field. I started out in 1985 from my home building computers. During the 90s, I owned a networking company and an internet service provider. And over the years, I've continually worked to own networks for small business. I have always been on the cutting edge of technology, and some would say the bleeding edge. I've always tried to discover new trends in this industry and making them work for both small offices and home offices. In other words, bringing technology to the little guy. About 10 years ago, I discovered a new trend in customer support. It was called remote support. I started developing ideas on how to remotely maintain an entire network. I have continually fine-tuned that technology over the last 10 years. I've helped many businesses and home users with remote support. That is what led to the creation of Rescue Me 911. The only difference now is that I'm doing it for myself and not for other companies. With Rescue Me 911, I've also created a different business model. Instead of charging customers by the hour, I charge one flat rate to fix anything that can be done remotely. Also, if you're not satisfied with my work, you'll not be charged. Do you know that over 90% of the issues on computers today can now be resolved remotely? And that is what Rescue Me 911 is all about. We also have managed services that allow us to monitor your network 24/7 and respond immediately to fix problems, usually before you even know about it. If you need immediate assistance, please click on the help button and you will be instantly put into a chat session so we can discuss your problem. Thank you for contacting Rescue Me 911.
Yeah, guys, and I have to tell you, he's amazing. He's very patient. You know, I don't know, I think most of us who are not used to dealing with computer problems, when we have them, we just want to sometimes take the computer and throw it out the window, you know? But he is just so calm and so patient on the phone. See, I dealt with him on the phone. His business is mainly online for tech support. But for the problem my friend was having in his computer, it required me to call him on the phone. So he was just so patient with me and so helpful. And I just highly recommend him to anybody, you know, who has any kind of a PC problem. He doesn't do Mac computers, but he does do PCs. So, you know, just give him a call if you have a problem.
I probably need to give him a call because my computer, it really sucks. I have a website, like I was saying earlier, it's juliebrookscomedy.com, and it's actually on Weebly. So it's like juliebrookscomedy.weebly.com, and I can't go on and blog. And my main reason for starting that website was so that I could go on and blog every single day just so that I could sort of keep people updated. And I can't update for some reason on my computer. Every time I go to that certain website, it just closes out. It's just that one website, though.
Well, you know, his name is Wayne Jordan. He's a friend of mine here on Facebook. So, you
know,
feel free.
Look him up on Facebook.
Yeah, just maybe send him a friend request and tell him, you know, that that you know me, and I'm sure that then he'll be able to help you with the computer. You know, he may give you a call, or if you want to go through his service, you know, you can do that too. And I'm sure, you know, he'll help you out. I mean, he's amazing. Like I said, this computer was like completely frozen and wouldn't let you do anything, and we figured it out. He figured it out, and we were able to fix it for the most part. We still have some more to do for it, but I mean, we were able to get past that frozen point, you know. So, yeah, just check him out. I mean, he's a very great guy, and plus, like Joey said, he's from Texas, you know. Texans are great.
Well, everyone I've ever met from Texas I really like, so.
Yeah, well, you know, I actually looked at houses in Texas to move there at one point. I went to Austin and looked at a lot of houses, and I looked all over the United States, actually, many, many cities. So, but that city is still, Austin, Texas, is still high on my list to hopefully maybe go back and look at houses again. But one of these days, I mean, San Francisco is a wonderful place, been here 20 years, but you can't afford to buy a house.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to buy a one-bedroom condominium, it's going to cost you over $500,000.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, John,
yeah.
If you want to go really cheap, you know, they say Memphis, Tennessee is the best place to live in the U.S. It's the lowest cost of living and lowest rent, best place to live in the U.S.
Wow, Memphis, really? I didn't know that. I actually grew up about 45 minutes south of Memphis in New Albany, Mississippi.
Oh, wow.
Anywhere down
yeah.
south, that you're going to find lower prices and better housing costs.
I actually had an apartment when I was in college. It was based on my income. It was $89 a month.
Okay.
Oh, God, that
when
reminds
I was in college,
me.
This was back in 1997 through 2002.
Excellent.
Well, you know, when I moved out when I was 19 years old. Okay, and that was, okay, I don't know if I want to tell you the year of that, but anyways, it was in the early, very early 80s, and my rent was $135 for a one-bedroom apartment downtown, you know?
Wow.
Can you imagine that? And you know what's funny is when I moved to San Francisco in 1992, like I said, well, now it's going on 21 years ago, my rent was only $200 for like 8 years in a row. They never raised my rent one time, you know, and that includes utilities and everything. So, yeah, things have changed.
You know, I actually had an apartment one time. I guess it was more like a house because it wasn't connected to anything, but it was like a dome house. It looked like a little igloo, and it was so neat. And my utilities were included. I think it was $230 a month for a little igloo. Everything was in one room, and there was like a divider between the bedroom and the living room, and then a door to the bathroom, but everything else was open in just one big room. And it was my first real apartment, so I really enjoyed it, but I looked like I was living in an igloo. I had round windows. The windows were round. And then there was a window. I think one of the reasons why I moved out is because there was a window above my tub, and I had a girlfriend one time over at my house taking a bath, and she looked up and saw someone like laying on top of the round window because it was a round dome, and so someone had crawled up on the dome and they were laying there on top of the window looking in.
Oh wow. My gosh.
And it was out in the country, so that was sort of creepy too.
Yeah, well, you should write that into your comedy routine. That's funny. Well, you know, I did want to mention before we get to another topic, there's one other topic I just kind of wanted maybe to throw out there because it's just really been frustrating this weekend. I mean, this whole week, 2 weeks now, actually. My friend got sick with a mysterious illness, and he had all kinds of things wrong with him, a rash and, you know, his throat closing up on him and acid reflux, and I mean, just all kinds of stuff going on. He's never had any of those in his life, you know, so he didn't know what was going on. And he tried to go to his doctor, and his doctor said, oh, we can't see you for like 2 weeks, okay? So then I took him to the emergency room, and they're like, oh, we can't help you. We don't know what it is. You need to see your doctor. So then, you know, he tries to go back to the doctor again, and again, we can't see you for 2 weeks. And then, you know, I encourage him to just try maybe go to an urgent care, you know. And, you know, these urgent care places are just like, they're like private clubs. It's like you have to be, your company has to be associated with them or they still won't see you. So, I mean, it was just like a nightmare. And finally, you know, he went and saw his doctor. And then the doctor was like over an hour late, and he just got mad and left. And we went to another doctor the next day, and finally he got diagnosed. Well, they don't know yet completely. They took like 8 tubes of blood and all kinds of samples and everything, but they think it's an allergy. They don't know yet. But it just is frustrating because of the health care in America. I don't know. What do you guys think? What are your thoughts about health care? You know, when you want to go see a doctor.
I hate health care in America, John. I can actually say I have 2 children, and when I was pregnant with my first child, I did not have insurance when I first got pregnant, and no one will see you if you are pregnant. They will not give you insurance after you get pregnant. There's nothing you can do, and so you end up having to get on, like, this government this government Medicare, Medicaid insurance, and then the doctor that you've been going to for years that you've been paying cash for your appointments still will not see you because you're not in their network now. So even though you were paying cash, now it's just really backwards. And I ended up actually, there is a program called PCIP, Pre-Existing Condition Insurance, and I
went
through the federal government, and I actually was able to get on the pre-existing condition insurance so that I no longer had to go to the Medicaid, because in Mississippi there's one clinic that you go to, and that is the only place you can go in the entire city if you are pregnant and you have that type of insurance. And I was in there, and I was maybe 30 years old, and I'm not saying I'm better than anybody, don't get me wrong, but I'm in there with these 15 and 16-year-olds, and they all had, you know, two or three kids already, and we were all just in this one big room, and it's just terrible conditions, and you had to go to this one clinic, and they didn't even have a doctor. They were nurse practitioners.
Oh.
And you didn't even know who was going to deliver your baby. You just got whoever was on call that night when you go into labor.
Hello? Oh, God.
Yep.
Hey, Wayne, is that you?
That's me.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. I just thought I'd call in and help you out on the unequal. You got two women versus one man. I thought I'd call in and help you out.
Oh, no. Well, he's trying to even the score.
And especially, well, you know, since I think both of these women are from the South.
Yes. And Southern women are hard to handle, aren't we, Wayne?
Yes, ma'am. I guarantee it. But I have been known to handle a few.
Okay. Well, you know what we're talking about is healthcare in America right now, Wayne. And, you know, Jolie was just telling us about her experience, you know. There's like, there was only like one place, you know, in where she could go. And what are your thoughts about it? I mean, what do you think we need to do? And
well, you know, John, I'm a little bit on the fiscal conservative side, so my ideas are not going to sync with most of your listeners or viewers. And I understand her dilemma. I mean, I do. I just, my issue is who's going to pay for it and how much we in this country, how much is much? I mean, how much, you know, when's enough? You know, it's like my wife tells me, said, when are you going to stop spending, you know? And sooner or later, you have to quit spending, and that's my only problem. And not that nobody doesn't deserve things. It's you know, sometimes you overspend. I don't know the answer to the question, to be honest with you. It's just that I'm a fiscal conservative.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. I didn't mean to put you in the spot or anything like that. No, what I was just saying that earlier, you know, I was talking about my friend, and when I was talking about my friend, it's the same friend that Wayne was helping me with the computer. And I think I even told you, Wayne, that he was at a doctor's appointment and stuff. But he's been suffering for 2 weeks because his doctor won't see him, the emergency room won't help him, and he has insurance, and he's paying insurance. He works, you know, he has a full-time job, and he can't get health care when he needs it, and it's sad.
Why is that?
It's really, because his doctor said he's busy, and the emergency room said, we don't know why you have a rash, we don't know what your condition is. We have no idea. You need to see your doctor. So then it's like a vicious cycle. See your doctor, go to the ER, and the doctor's office says, we can't get you in, so why don't you go to the ER? So he goes to the ER, and the ER says, go to your doctor. You know, he can't get any health care for 2 weeks.
Well, John, you know, the thing is, they are all doctors. They are practicing medicine, and we all know what practice does. It supposedly makes us perfect, so you have to keep practicing. And that's what they're practicing on all of us.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. And
we
you know
have
what
to
I always
tell them what's wrong with us. We have to go and find the medical books, and we have to look it up and tell them our symptoms exactly from the book,
exactly.
And then they can tell us, they can confirm what's wrong with us.
You know what, Julie? I totally agree. Unfortunately, in America, you have to be your own doctor. You have to research everything. You have to. That's what I did one time. I had an illness, and I
My doctor wasn't helping me completely, you know, with it. I did research. I found a brand new medication that just came out. I went there and I said, this is supposed to be good for my my condition. And he wrote it for me. And would you believe that one, because there's three medications I have to take, that third one that I recommended, he didn't recommend it. I had to recommend it. And it was the one that fixed everything. I mean, now I'm fine. You know, I'm therapeutic with my illness.
It.
And yeah. But here's the thing about it, though. Guess how much that medication costs a month if I didn't have insurance? Guess how much it costs?
$700 to $900.
$1,200.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
$1,200 for a 30-day supply of this miracle medication that came out that I saw on TV. And I asked my doctor about it, and he prescribed it. And I don't pay $1,200. I pay $100 almost. So most of it's paid for through my insurance. But the thing is that it's just crazy that medication can cost that much. And you know what? My friend went to the emergency room, and they probably are going to charge him like, they're going to charge the insurance company like probably $2,000 or something like that.
It's
probably
crazy, John, what's happened to emergency care. It's awful. I mean, I took my mother into the emergency room because she had the flu, and we didn't know if it was pneumonia or not. She's pretty old, so we want to make sure that it wasn't pneumonia because that can be really serious at her age. And we spent 6 hours there, and they didn't. They got everything wrong, so they had to retest her for like three times. And then they left her in this room. They never checked on her. They hooked her up to this monitor that didn't work. And I could read those monitors. I used to work in a hospital. And all of the readings were off, but it didn't matter because nobody came in and checked on her. It was crazy. And her TV didn't work. And so we were sitting there in the emergency room and taking bets on when somebody would come back. That was how we entertained ourselves. They finally came back that she did have the flu. It wasn't pneumonia. But now they're going to charge her $1,000 for going into this emergency room. And the nurses in there are like just out of med school. They have no idea what they're doing.
Emergency room, the only way that you can get anything if you're in an emergency room is if you're 8 or 9 months pregnant, because they don't want to deliver that baby in the emergency room.
Yeah, well, we have a really good hospital for labor and delivery. All of our nurses at this one particular hospital are very good for that service. But, you know, my mom's 85. She's not about to have a baby just for them.
No.
Right.
I don't recommend that at all.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
You were talking about that expensive medication.
Yes.
My father-in-law, who's 81, his medication, one shot. He has to have one shot per month. It's one of those life-saving, and he's 81. $4,000 a month. And
that's crazy.
It cost him $1,000 a month, and it costs Medicare $3,000 a month.
Wow.
And
wow.
And without that medication, he wouldn't be alive. But, I mean, so, you know, it's those kind of things. But, and you know, because of his age, of course, Medicare covers a certain portion of it. But still, it's those expensive drugs. And drive.
But don't you think, though, I mean, I think these pharmaceutical companies, you know, it's big business, you know, they don't care. They don't want you to get well. They want you to stay sick, in my opinion. They want you to stay as sick as long as you can, because they're going to make all kinds of money off of you. And especially for the elderly people, the seniors that have to take like sometimes 8-10 medications a day, you know. My mother, she used to have a really good deal with when she was on Social Security and Medicare and all that, and now she can't afford a lot of her medications, you know, and it's really sad. But, I mean, she's struggling with that because all of a sudden everything just went up, I mean, without any warning, you know, just all the costs just went up. And I don't know. I mean, I don't mean to be cynical about that, but it just seems like in America, you know, I don't know. I mean, here's the thing I want to say really quickly. The friend that's sick right now, he's from, he lived in France for 8 years. And when he lived in France for 8 years, if you went in there, I'm a little exaggerating right now, okay, but I'm just saying this. This is giving you a good example, though. If you went in there with a stubbed toe, they may keep you for 2 weeks in the hospital, you know, with sponge baths and everything else. You know, you have a great time. But, you know, the thing is, you know, I mean, they spoil you in France. Everything is 100% paid for. You never pay a penny, and they give you excellent care. Now, you know, you have a baby. They kick you out as fast as possible. My mother had open-heart surgery many years ago even, and she was gone out of the hospital within 2 weeks. You know, I mean, it's crazy, you know, and I just hope there's some answer, but I don't know what it is. And I hope that our Congress and our president and everyone else, you know, works hard and solves this problem. That's all I can think of. Well, anyways, guys, I just wanted to say, you know, we're not almost out of time, but we are a little bit. And I just wanted to throw it out to you. Is there anything going on right now, like in your life, or anything that's a hot topic that you want to talk about? I'd like to leave this last segment open for anyone who wants to talk about anything that's on your mind.
Well, I would like to say that the employment rates, like, I've been out looking for a job literally for probably about 6 months. I do comedy, but that's definitely a part-time thing. And I was so embarrassed the other day. I saw this. I was sort of looking for a venue to do a comedy show in, and I saw this sign that said shows nightly, so I had the assumption that it was music shows. And I went into this bar, and all it had was a little window, and a woman's face came to the window, and I realized at that point I was in a strip bar, and I didn't know exactly what I should say, so I was just like, you know, I was going to come in. I'm sort of looking for a job, but I don't think that being here and doing a comedy show would work very well, so I think I'm just going to go now. I had to speak to her because I couldn't just turn around and walk out, and as I was standing there talking to her, there were about 7 girls sort of standing around, and I could tell because they were half-dressed. Some of them didn't have anything on at all, and I was just so embarrassed because I didn't really look very well through the window, but the window, it looked like they were moving furniture in. It looked like they needed furniture for this bar, but obviously they had poles in there probably.
Well, I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yeah, it was really comedy because I was really dressed up. I looked like I was going to court because I was looking for a job, and so I go into the strip bar looking like I'm really professional. It was just really embarrassing.
You could do strip comedy.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I'd wear like a sweater and then a coat and then a big bulky coat over it and then probably a scarf and a hat and all that and boots. And then do strip comedy.
But, you know, one of my jokes, I have this really ugly dress that I bought at a antique store one time, and it literally looks like curtains, and like the drape curtains. And so I wore a long black trench coat, and I explained, you know, that I couldn't find anything to wear, and my friend told me that I could just take whatever I wanted from her closet, and after searching and searching and couldn't find anything, I just decided I would take her curtains, you know, and take my long black jacket off, and you can see that I'm wearing this dress that looks just like curtains, just fastened into a dress.
I'm sorry, John, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead, Lane. Yeah.
No, I was just going to relate that story that many years ago, I accidentally went into this private club, and I'm talking many years ago, and I walked into a gay club. And I had never been into and it was a gay club that had the singers dressed as women. What do they call those?
drag queens.
Now, you're talking about a southern white boy who's never been in a drag queen club before, and I actually paid to get into it. And it took me about 15 minutes to realize that all the waiters were topless, and they were waiters, not waitresses. that was quite my first experience for that kind of thing. Yeah, so I can kind of empathize with her on that.
You know, I did want to say, Julie, yeah, I'm glad you brought this topic up because I kind of did want to mention something. You know, I've been trying to get back into what I call the regular work world, you know, where you have a real job and work and maybe 40 hours a week and all that. And I went on 3 interviews in the last week and a half.
Yay.
And I actually got offered a job on Wednesday, a few
Yay.
Days ago.
Yay, that's
yeah, one. But I turned it down. Isn't that bad? I know.
Why? What you want. If it's not what you want, you should keep looking until you get what you know will work.
Well, you know what happened was is that it's been a struggle, you know, trying to find it. But you know what I tried to do is I tried to just be extremely honest on my resume, you know. And it's working. I mean, I had, like I said, 3 companies interview me. I had a job offer already, and that's only within the last, like, I don't know, week and a half, 2 weeks. So I'm just going to keep, if that's encouraging me to keep going and keep trying, you know. But this last job, the one that they offered me, they were so sweet. Oh, God, they were the sweetest people, really nice. And they really loved me, and, you know, they really wanted me to work there. But it was, it didn't seem like it was the right fit. And I think, like you said, Julie, it has to be the right fit.
John, there's one thing that I encourage everybody that's looking for a job to accept job interviews with companies that they know they don't want to work for to get the good practice. So when they do go to a job interview for a job that they do want, they'll really ace the interview because you need practice, just like with comedy. You know, you need practice to make sure you do well in the interview.
Well, that's great, and that's how I kind of felt, too, because every time I go on one of the – well, I get the phone interviews first. That's the big thing they do now, you know, to do the phone interviews. And then you get the in-person interviews, and then sometimes you have to come back for the second in-person interview. And that's what happened with the last job. It was like 3 interviews, on the phone, in-person, and they offered me the job the same day, like 2 hours after I left, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, and I felt so bad about it. And then I said, you know what, I don't think I want to do this job. So I had to give it up. You know, I just had to say, that was the fastest I ever had a job.
Hey, John.
Hey, John, I presume we're all over 40 here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm actually 33.
Oh, you were a young one. Okay.
I'm a baby.
You're a baby. I got kids as old as you. I was going to, the only thing I was going to say, at 53, and you know, looking, you know, and I've done like John, you know, and I am doing my own thing like you guys, but you know, from time to time, I, you know, when things are dull, and I try to say I need some more income, and you know, I just cannot do certain things anymore. You know, I will not interview for jobs. I will not go after jobs that I know I used to do. You know, when I was 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. I just will not do it again. And you have to realize that. And maybe, John, that's what you got into, is that you just couldn't, like I cannot go back to work in an office again. I just cannot do it. And you just right. you just might as well, you might as well come to a meeting with yourself and say, hey, I can't do this no more. You know, and that's where
right,
that's where
right.
I come to.
I agree. I signed up with a temp agency because I'm tired of the interview and then the letdown if you just do it on your own. But at the temp agency, I got an employment advisor that her hair stuck straight up and she was wearing orange and leopard print spandex. And she's going to tell me how to dress for an interview, right?
Oh, no.
I can really empathize with that girl, though, because when you're working as a psychologist and as a therapist and you are at least 20 years younger than your clients and you're giving them advice based on your schooling and your education and your life experiences pretty much on how to deal with their children and things that you maybe don't know 100% from experience, I've gotten that before. How can you tell me how to handle my marriage when you are, you know, right out of graduate school, or you don't have any children of your own? And they would try to get personal with you. And when I went through my internship at a mental health place, I actually had someone who had a PhD quit on my second day, and I got all of her clients. And so here I am, an intern, taking on a PhD client, and it was, nobody wanted to even meet with me because I was new and I was still in school and I didn't even have my degree yet.
I even had someone
bring me in country eggs. They're like eggs from, like, straight from their hen house to give to the previous therapist. And when they saw that they were going to see me, when they got up literally and took the eggs with them.
Oh, no. They didn't give you the eggs?
No, they did not give me the eggs.
I remember just a few years, I mean, this was probably 5 years ago, I went and got a job in an office, and this is where the last straw happened, is my boss, who was 20 years my junior, came to work, and I'm a coat and tie kind of guy, okay? I mean, that's, when I go to an office, I dress business-like, okay? He dressed with his shirt hanging out, with his shoestrings untied. So I asked him one day, you know, why do you not tie your shoestring? Because I'm smart enough not to trip over. And I said to myself, I'm too old for this shit. I just couldn't deal with it. I just like, oh, my God. And he was my boss.
Wow.
Oh, gosh. I know.
Arrogant.
But yeah. I know in some cases with some businesses, you know, like people that help you, like, for example, I worked in a weight loss company, a very popular one. I worked there for 10 years. I was a center director, and I never had a weight problem at that time, okay? Let's not talk about it right now. That's not nice, okay? So we're not going to talk about how all of a sudden the shorts are always falling off of me now fit perfectly. So I guess, you know, maybe the dryer finally, you know, shrunk them enough. I don't know. But anyway.
Well, at least you don't have to buy new clothes.
But, you know, the thing is back then, you know, I was very thin, you know, and looked great, I guess, physically there. But the thing was is that, you know, these ladies would come in and they'd be like, well, what do you know about weight loss? You know, and they're looking at me, you know, and I'm like, because I've been trained on this and I know what you're going through. I know what you're feeling, and I'm here for you and I'm going to help you, you know. And I helped this one lady. She went from 330-something pounds to 135 pounds.
Wow.
Because she lost 200 pounds. And what? In the process, she got a promotion, which shouldn't be because of her weight, I know, but she got a promotion based on it. And also she found a guy, and she invited me to the wedding. So I was there at the wedding and the wedding reception. It was wonderful, you know. So, but she was the one that told me that. You know, she was like, how can you help me? You know, she's looking at me. I'm probably weighing about 135 pounds at the time. And she's like, how can you help me? And I told her, I said, I can help you because I've been trained. That's my background, you know. So,
you know,
but that was one
want
of the
best. Know that they can people need to relate, you know. And when they feel they can relate, they're more likely to open up to people. And I've learned that through the short time I've been doing comedy. If I talk about something that the majority of the audience can relate to, it goes over so much better than the ones that can't relate to it.
Yeah.
And when they know that you're being real.
To relate to somebody wearing bright orange and leopard print spandex.
Right.
hey, girls, ladies, if you ever want any real comedy material, all you got to do is talk to me. I got all kinds of colloquialisms and stories and stuff I can tell you all day long.
Well, we're going to pick your brain because, you know, I don't know, Wayne, did you hear my, I don't know if you were online or not at the time listening, but I played my comedy routine that I had recorded. Did you get a chance to hear it?
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay, great, okay.
I would rather hear you in front of a live audience so I can really feel the feedback, because it come across to me, it was funny, but you know, sometimes the delivery without the response is not as contagious as I say. And
right,
I'm a lady.
Right.
The ladies on the phone are professionals, are, you know, trying to be professionals. Me, I'm a layman, so I only know what's funny. I thought it was funny. I just, you know, I like the, and I can't remember everybody's name, but I like the thing. Yeah, you the penis thing. You need to keep on going with that. You know, it's like, you know, I can't feel my penis.
Well, let me tell you though, guys. I'll just give you a little feedback on that. Okay, is that if I performed it, I would be actually simulating a certain act with the penis. So, you know, I mean, I was like, you know.
Well, you
like,
mean
you know,
would be trying to feel your penis is what you're telling
me. Means
not
it's visual.
Yeah, I would give you a very good visual, yes. Yeah.
Right.
I know what I want to do visually. I just can't do it on the radio, you know. So.
That's right. Well, of course. That's why it's all, you know, a lot of comedy is body language. You know,
exactly.
Some of the best. Yeah. That's why I hate social media is because there's no body language involved. There's no going back and forth. You can't really tell what people are saying, you know. That's
yeah.
why I hate
and
it.
And sometimes things get taken wrong. I know Wayne in particular can't take my joke sometimes.
I think Joey said that, Wayne, sometimes you can't take her jokes sometimes. What is that?
Do I know Joey?
Yeah, we're friends.
Oh, well, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're good friends, aren't we?
Well, I mean, I don't always know everybody's name, so, you know, forgive me on that part. Well, I don't know. I think I'm pretty good at taking people's jokes. Which joke would you tell me that I wouldn't take?
Oh, I don't know. I think sometimes, you know, when you write stuff out, like in the comments and things, you can take things, anybody can take things the wrong way.
Yes,
what's
that's
your,
true.
What's your last name, Joy, on Facebook?
Savage.
Oh, yeah, I know you. Yeah. I love
yeah.
you, man. We get along famously.
Yeah.
Hey, John, before you get off the air, I just wanted to let you know I would never defriend you just because you voted for Obama. That's pretty shallow.
Well, that's okay. Thank you. But apparently someone that I've known for 51 years apparently wants to do that. So what can
yeah.
I do about it?
That's not a demarcation point for me. But, Joy, I'm glad that that's you. I didn't realize that that was Joy Savage on the line.
That's
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Well, you know, guys, I did want to say that right now the 90 minutes have come and gone. But if you want to, I am working on making the show 2 hours, okay? So it is scheduled for 2 hours tonight if I wanted to go further, but I just wanted to say I think we had a really good show. So I think maybe what we can do is, I mean, I have like a, if you want to hear a funny audio clip, I have a funny audio clip of a prank call from Judge Judy or B. Author, if you guys want to hear that in the night, which one would you rather listen to, B. Author or Judge Judy?
Judge Judy,
yeah.
Okay, so here's
I'll let the girls decide, you know.
Okay, well, here is Judge Judy versing a receptionist on the phone, okay? And then we'll be right back.
We're calling Pembroke Pines VIP and Catering Hotline. Please hold momentarily. A live operator will be right with you.
Good evening, Pines VIP Direct Line. How may I help you?
Good afternoon. Hello?
Yes, ma'am. How can I help you?
Tell me your name.
My name is Tammy. How can I help you?
Tell me your last name.
My last name's not necessary, ma'am. How can I help you?
Listen to me. Just answer this question. Tell me your last name.
Ma'am, I would. What are you calling for?
I'm 10 steps ahead of you. I'm a lot older than you are. You may be as smart as I am when you get to be my age, but you're not there now. So when I ask you
ma'am,
a question, you'll give me an answer. Tell me your last
name. Ma'am, you've reached... Okay, ma'am, you've reached Pines VIP
I
direct line.
To speak
is there something I can assist you
speak
with?
Clearly, so that I can understand you. Forget it! You want to say something?
No, ma'am, I'm trying to understand what your call is regarding.
Let's hear it.
Ma'am?
Do you listen at all?
Your phone keeps breaking up. I'm trying to understand what your call is regarding.
Have I been respectful to you?
I'm not understanding you, ma'am.
Tell me your last name.
Ma'am, I'm the off-site receptionist for... My last name is not necessary. How
you
can I help you?
Live as hopefully as long as I'm... But you're not as smart as I am yet. I'm a really smart
Is this
lady.
A recording?
Yes! When you're here, I ask questions, you answer them. Unless I'm looking at you for an answer, do not speak. Do we understand each other?
Hold on one moment, please.
Okay.
I love Judge Judy.
You know, and the sad thing about that, John, is that's the truth. They can't answer a simple question. What's your last name? Oh, my God. Oh, man.
I have a few other ones, but I think what I'd like to do is just, I think we had a great show tonight, and I appreciate all of you guys calling in, you know, Julie and Joey and Wayne, and you guys are just great friends, but I think we are out of time, so I guess I just wanted to also thank those people who were listening. And because I do, like I said, I do know how many people listen. And so far, we have 6,500 listeners.
Yay. Wow.
Yeah. Yes, over 6,500. So that is great. And I just want to say please join us next Saturday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for our next episode. But for now, I guess I want to just wish you guys all a great night. This is John signing off. And good night for now, friends, and have a good night, okay?
Good night, John.
And thanks for calling in. All righty. Bye-bye.
Good night, ladies. Good night, John.
Good night,
Thank
Wayne.
You, Wayne. Thanks. Bye-bye.
You too, guys.